Skinner still with it, drops it back. Bogosian, one-timer stop, rebound in front. Eichel with a chance at it. Scores! Rasmus Dahlin!
Sign me up for some Swedish House Mafia tonight. The party song. Especially if Dahlin scores. Or any of the other Swedes. Sabres tonight, 7:30. What?
Nothing. I'm putting together Better to Forget It for you.
All right. I'm into that. Yeah. Sabres and Flyers tonight. I'm excited. Thanksgiving Survivor rolls along. Somebody pointed out, as long as leftovers are available, you can game the system and keep all the food.
Well,
so turkey's out, but leftovers still there.
Uh-huh. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it works.
No. Why would you keep leftovers?
Because leftovers are delicious.
But you have no leftover turkey.
Yeah, well, you do in this situation.
Allowing leftover turkey.
Well, leftovers are leftovers from Thanksgiving dinner. It means you would miss all of dinner, but get the leftovers.
Okay.
Gaming the system. Pointing to the old head here.
Okay. All right, if you say so, because I was thinking about getting rid of leftovers, because if there's no turkey left over, what's the point of having leftovers now? But that's okay.
I've got a quick thing on Jeff Skinner, who, by the way, is in Thanksgiving Survivor. He is a contestant. Or we can get back to our conversation on the Rams and Chiefs. Which do you want? The thing on Skinner is a little context. And you tell me what you think about it. I'll just give it to you quickly. So earlier this week, I mentioned that my Sabres Twitter source is telling me that Jeff Skinner's camp is looking for, you know, $9 to $9.5 million to not go to the market. And there were some that really reacted strongly to that as if it's a ridiculous suggestion. Did you see what Pierre LeBrun tweeted about Artemi Panarin?
No, I saw he's got a story up about the contract extension.
Mm-hmm.
What did he tweet?
That Panarin's camp is looking for
$9 million a year.
10 to 11.
Whoa. Wow.
10 to $11 million.
Is this like the new going rate that I've got to get used to
for elite
like the
wingers?
Top goal scorers?
It should be, right? So now that I tell you that, does Skinner asking for nine seem like it's entirely possible?
I suppose if he's getting 10, then
again,
nine would be nice.
It doesn't mean that any of these guys are going to get this, but here's Pierre LeBrun reporting that it looks like Panarin is going to look for 10 or 11 million a year. He'd be the highest paid winger, right? He'd pass Ovechkin. And he scores more than Skinner. He's a better player. He's got more goals. He gets more assists. He's a little bit more dynamic. Whatever. Panarin's maybe a step above. So if he's going to get 10 to 11, is it still ridiculous to suggest that Skinner might be asking for 9? Doesn't mean he's going to get 9.
Yeah, the winger is a key part of the discussion because sometimes with the bigger salaries, people will say, well, if it's a center, you know, if it's Eichel, if it's Matthews, whatever, if it's McDavid, if it's a center, you say, okay, centers are more valuable than wingers. That, you know, that guy sets up the whole line. He can score. These guys can all score goals. They can set guys up. So centers more than wingers. So I'm a little surprised to hear that number for a winger because traditionally you wouldn't, right? You wouldn't, you'd tend to value the center position more than anything else. If that's, I just have to, I guess, get myself wrapped around the idea of where salaries are going for the top goal scorers in the league.
Well, shouldn't the NHL eventually get to about like a two-tiered system where the really great players get paid 10, 11, and the guys like, not to single these guys out, but like Jurgensen's and Larson are always going to be 2 to 3. You know, where are the raises?
Is this the middle class discussion?
Sure, where are the raises for the guys that are replaceable? Skinner, not replaceable. Panarin, not replaceable, without spending that level of money. So it seems to me that what the NHL salary structure should eventually do, Matthews is going to get 14, Tavares is at 11, Marner is going to get 11 or 10, who knows?
But then what do you do with the Nazem Kadris of the world? Or in this team, say, Oposo. Oposo's not getting... Well, I mean, maybe Oposo's a bad example. You know what I'm saying? That
those
next
guys are already,
tier underneath.
Those guys are already signed. Right, so when Nazem Kadri becomes available, doesn't it kind of end up looking like the quarterback market where, well, he's a center and he's good and we don't want to lose him, so let's give him the Derek Carr contract, which is he gets overpaid and we know it, but he's of value. You have some players that I think will get those top dollars because they definitely deserve it. Then you'll have some that sneak up near them that are on the second tier. But the middle class, it just seems to me like the middle class of hockey player over time would naturally be eliminated by this.
But with this, with hockey too, isn't it, you also have to factor in, once you give these contracts out, they're guaranteed. With the NFL contracts, right, you can get out of contracts. I mean, you've got prorated signing bonus and cap hits, but you can throw a ton of money in back years of contract. You can make a $100 million quarterback contract look good, but you know you can get out of the bulk of your 100. Look at the Bills contract with Tyrod Taylor. He didn't get $90 million out of it. There were out clauses built in, so they paid him a little bit, and they eventually got out from the bulk of that contract. Whereas if you hand out, you know, a $10 million a year contract in the NHL, you are, you know, that's it. It's on your books for 7 years, 6 years, whatever it is. It's all guaranteed. There's nothing you can do about it. So I think it makes it a little bit more difficult. I think that would be more of a challenge for NHL general managers if we get to the, we're going to have our elites, we're going to have our quote-unquote low-paying guys, if you will. How you make all that work with the middle tier guys, because everything is guaranteed, I think that makes it really challenging for NHL general managers. I'm not sure how they would handle all that stuff. How many elite guys could you have under your cap on a regular basis?
I mean, Tampa was the first team to be talked about this way, right? When they had Richards and LeCavalier and San Louis. Hey, they're too top heavy. Top heavy is what teams are.
Yeah.
The really good teams generally have 2 to 3 guys making a big paycheck. If they don't, it's because they got in before all this.
I was going to say, you could point out, I was trying to think about Edmonton. For sure, McDavid, obviously. Lucic was a top-heavy contract. I'm trying to think who the other guys would have been that they would have gone top-heavy on. But yeah, I guess I would wonder, you could pay Eichel. You could pay Skinner. What do you do with, I don't know, the Pominvilles of the world? I mean, he's not going to be around, you know what I'm saying? But that player who's good, but he's not a $10 million a year
guy. No,
guy.
Not at all. What's Pominville's next contract, no matter where he is?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a bad example.
$3 million?
He's at the end of his career.
Right.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's a guy who is 26, 27, 25, whatever. He's not your Austin Matthews. That's why I think Kadri popped into my head, because he's got value to the Leafs. He's a good player. He can play offense. He plays defense for you. He can grind it out.
But if he wants anything of significance,
he's not getting Marner, Nylander, or Marner money.
And the salary cap will make it so once you have, whether it's the Leafs with those guys we mentioned or the Sabres with Eichel and Dahlin and Skinner as their big three contracts going forward, you know, once you have that, the guys that want seven, well, we're going to let you go somewhere else and make that seven. We're going to try and find somebody that can do it for 3 to 4 or on an entry-level deal or on a bridge deal.
Like Kadri, I was curious what he makes. I mean, he's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good player, and he's got a key role in that mix with the star players. He's under contract through 2021-22. His cap hit's 4-5.
That's
nothing.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
For everything he does, that's a really very manageable number.
And when it's up, if he wants to make seven, guess what? Somewhere else.
Yeah, right. Because you can't afford to pay.
And a
all
team
those guys
that doesn't have, you know, it's kind of like the boat the Sabres used to be in when Cody Hodgson would show up and they'd say, "Here's our number one center. Let's pay him $4 million a year for six years."
Right.
The reality is he's not a number one center, and you get to be in the situation that teams get with quarterbacks. All right, well, we'll pay this guy a lot of money because he's the best we can do, or he's the best we've got, and we need someone to play the position. I got a text on this from Scott in Buffalo. If the Sabres sign Skinner, what will be the implications on the rest of the cap room for other players to stay? Is it too much to be able to keep this group together? Not anything to worry about yet. They have not committed to very many players past next year. They have $50 million in cap room. If Skinner takes 9 of that, you've got $40 million in cap room. You don't have a lot of players signed, but you're going to have 3 first-round picks. In theory, you'll get these players. Maybe one or two, maybe two of them are good. And they're cheap for a while, right? You want entry-level success.
Mm-hmm.
The Sabres here have an opportunity on Dahlin's entry-level deal and Mittelstadt's entry-level deal.
Yeah.
They squandered Eichel's. Eichel was making nothing, and they didn't win games because they didn't have a good enough roster. So now you're paying Eichel 10, and you've got other guys on entry-level deals. So it's kind of like the quarterback situation, right? When you've got a quarterback on his first contract, that's cheap.
And you know
Jared Goff is really cheap right now. Patrick Mahomes is really cheap. What happens when that's up? Well,
then you
got to
pay him $100+ million.
Exactly, and you've got to ditch that one receiver you were going to pay, and you got to get rid of that offensive tackle that you can't afford.
Well, look what the Rams did in free agency on defense. You know, you can go ahead and pay Aaron Donald. You can go get Ndamukong Suh. You can go get Marcus Peters. You can spend all this money. Why? You could even give Todd Gurley his big contract by running back standards for sure. They loaded up because they didn't have to pay $100 million and $20, $25 million in cap space a year to Jared Goff. So it gives you flexibility. One quick thing, by the way. Well done, Toronto Maple Leafs. Kadri signed this past April, coming off back-to-back 30-goal seasons, and he's had a 20-goal season. But 6 years, $27 million. That's really good. I mean, 4-5 is honestly, for back-to-back 30-goal seasons, I feel like that's low. that's a really good contract done by the Toronto Maple Leafs for a guy who's a good two-way player, and he's getting 60 points a year and had back-to-back 30-goal years. I think Ryan O'Reilly makes $7 million with that kind of money, or those numbers. So well done, Toronto. If you can manage your cap like that, you give Matthews the big deal, you give, well, who knows what's happening with Nylander, you're probably going to give Marner the big deal, and you get a guy like that for 4 or 5, that's great.
One thing about...
And the other thing, I'm sorry, just quickly about the Sabres, guess what? You're not paying a big goalie salary either. In fact, your two goalies put together are taking up what? How much cap space? $4 million?
Yeah.
$3 million? Whatever? Between Hutton and Ullmark? That's great.
One other thing about the value here. So I had a listener point out that apparently on TSN, this idea that Skinner is looking for $9 million got reported a lot of places and mocked in other places. And apparently on Mr. Magoo, that's right. That's who tweeted at me, Mr. Magoo.
I used to watch him
that
in cartoons.
1050 in Toronto, they made fun of the idea that Skinner would get that money, saying that Marner is better and Marner will get more. Well, there's something very, very significant in the difference between Skinner and Marner. And that is?
Well, Marner's younger, for one thing.
And?
He's on his entry-level deal right now. He's restricted.
Bingo.
He's not free.
He's restricted. And since these teams are still afraid to offer sheet, Mitch Marner negotiates with one team.
Yeah.
And, hey, do the Leafs play hardball? I don't know. Ask Willie Nylander.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we're coming up to the deadline on him.
Jeff Skinner, when he signs with the Sabres, if it's before free agency or on July 1st, he will have 31 potential suitors bidding against one another. And Mitch Marner, I don't know what his salary is going to be. Should he get more than Skinner? Maybe. But the Leafs are the Leafs. And until somebody makes them pony up, they can lowball him and they can control his rights.
Yeah.
So you might think that an RFA deserves more money. You know, David Pastrnak signed for 6 and change. How come Pastrnak makes 6 and Skinner's going to make 9? Because when you get to the open market, it gets different, right? All these players that don't get offer sheeted take less money. So as long as that system is still in place, you're going to have players that make more money than other guys that are locked up because their teams hold their rights and they're exclusive negotiating.
When Stamkos signed his last deal with Tampa, was he going to be a UFA?
He was going to the market.
Okay,
yes,
so you had that threat. When you were negotiating to keep him, you had to remember you're keeping him from going to the market, unrestricted market, so that's going to cost you more money. Any agent worth his salt will make sure it costs the team more money to make sure they keep a guy from going to free agency. When we talked about Kane, Evander Kane, right? And we spent however many months going up to the point where he was traded to San Jose, talking about the Sabres' decision. Sure, there were off-ice issues and different things about that. But one of the key points of that, why we would sit here and tell you they're going to trade him because they're not going to re-sign him, one of the things was he's got a chance to go to the unrestricted free agent market. If you're Evander Kane, you're going to build that into your price. Hey, Buffalo, you want me to stay without even getting to the market? Great, that's going to cost you another, I don't know, $1 million, whatever. It's the price for your house went up because you put an addition on or you put in a new roof just before you decided to sell it. Well, you're going to ask for more. So, it's completely, if I'm Skinner and I know I'm going to the market, my price goes up. You know, it's your buy it now proposition.
Yeah, right.
You absolutely build that into your ticket.
Right. If you're Jeff Skinner and the Sabres call, if you want 8.5, you say...
You ask for more.
9.5.
Right, because you are however many months away, July 1st, somebody do the math for me, 8, 9, 10 months. And you've never been on the unrestricted market before. You've never been in this position before. It's your first chance, and you might be coming off your career best season in terms of goals. Man, you drive that price up sky high.
Paul writes in, have you guys ever asked Bottrell his thoughts on offer sheets? Yes, we have, and I feel like he does have a progressive view of them, and by that, suggesting that it's not necessarily out of the question, but at the same time that it is out of the question, because teams just don't do it. It's this offseason's the one to watch, Marner and Matthews.
Yeah.
Will someone push the Leafs on Matthews?
Boy,
I mean,
I know you don't like it, and I bring this up, the whole owners and GMs and they're afraid to do things. That would be a massive offer sheet.
They should do it.
I mean, you would blow McDavid's average annual salary out of the water. If
you don't have to blow it out of the water. You say
15?
Well, you go 14.
Okay. Well, that's
because they're going to
out of the water.
They're going to try and what? Say take 11, take it for the team.
I guess
be a good team player.
Here's my question then: could you ever put together an offer sheet that the number is just so high, Toronto just wouldn't? They're going to match anything, right?
I think on Matthews they would match anything, but don't forget when we talked about William Nylander. I have a tweet from July 1st, that day, offer sheet Nylander. You know how many responses said the Leafs will match whatever you give? No, they won't. Look at them right now.
Yeah.
They're taking trade offers. So this idea that they will just match whatever you do, not true. On Matthews, probably true. On Nylander, they wouldn't have matched. You could have William Nylander for a first, a second, and a third,
yeah,
probably. Any team in the league could have that player for that.
I guess instead, I still would have wondered, what's the magic number? And I mean salary cap number. What's the magic number for Toronto to say, if it got to that point, if Nylander was offer sheeted, maybe there is no magic number for Matthews. They would just say,
isn't it about $8
Gulp
million?
We'll do it. I wonder what that would have been for the Leafs. What's the breaking point where you say, can't do it. Love the player. We'll take the picks. For a team that right now is playing to win a Stanley Cup and feels they're in a window of a few years to win a Stanley Cup, I don't know. We never find out because no one ever makes an offer sheet on these guys, but I would wonder what would have been the breaking number for the Leafs on Nylander. I don't know if they have one for Marner if it gets to that point. Matthews, sure, they're probably going to look at it and go, no matter what, anybody loads up a sheet, we're just going to keep Austin Matthews. He is the generational talent that is the centerpiece to this team. He's probably not going anywhere.
Texter points out, and this is something that I think Elliot Friedman said. A GM told him he would bet his shirt that Lou Lamoriello is going to offer sheet a Leafs player.
I forgot about him. Islanders, right?
Yeah.
I didn't
Marner,
think about
Matthews,
him.
One
lost
of them.
Tavares, you know?
Let's vote out some food.
Before we do that, John tweeted in, off of the tweet about you voting out turkey.
I voted out turkey, yes.
John tweeted in, it's obvious Howard and Jeremy's support of the tank destroyed the culture in the room.
True.
And led to this dreadful decision. Too bad they didn't learn from the cautionary tale of Howard's son.
Yeah, in prison, of course.
Yeah, well, out now.
Yeah, right.
Work release,
thank
good
goodness.
Behavior.
Thanksgiving Survivor, your remaining contestants. Let's vote two out each because we've got a lot of work to do here. Left in
it. Two out, okay.
Yeah, vote out two. Mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn, stuffing, beer, wine, liquor, family, friends, Jeff Skinner, each of the three football games, the turkey trot, rolls, pie, yams, the night before, holiday mode. What that means is, you know, you shift into holiday mode. Leftovers, green beans, and salad. Brayton was going back in time. A couple years ago, the kids' table was in as a contestant.
Yeah, you don't have it.
We don't have the kids' table this year. Also, naps. Bubble team left out. Very controversial.
Can I still take a nap tomorrow?
You can, you can. Look at the bright side. You don't have to vote it out.
Yeah.
It gets to stay.
I live for naps. That's sad.
So vote out two.
Let's see. I'm voting out two. Okay. Oh, what the heck. Mashed potatoes.
Wow, man. The Titans are falling here.
Now I don't have to forget about it.
That's right.
So mashed potatoes are gone. You want another one, huh?
Yep, yep.
Well, I was going to do this earlier. Green beans.
All right, good. Very good. I'm going to vote out salad.
Okay.
I mean, really, who wants a salad? Yeah. I'm going to vote out salad and...
Gobble, gobble, turkey. Gobble, gobble, turkey.
You know, it's between sweet potatoes and yams.
Turkey gobblers.
This is like...
Keep the sweet potatoes.
It's like a bowl game between the Mac and
vote out
the AAC here.
Vote out the yams. Vote out the yams.
Yams, okay, fine, yams.
Okay, thanks, because I like sweet potatoes. They're kind of a dessert / side dish.
They can be very delicious.
Know? They are delicious, yeah. Ooh, Brayton's got a look of consternation on his face as he drums his fingers.
Brayton's
on the
here to make, you can tell, he's got a look on his face. He's here to make a name for himself right now. He's about to earn a nickname here.
Mm. All right, let's see here. I'm looking at the list and what we have left. Well, I think the first thing that I'm going to eliminate is a game because none of these games look
That's fine.
Good at all.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe New Orleans, Atlanta, but I'm gonna eliminate Dallas, Washington right off the bat.
Okay, that would have been my first elimination. Would have been Detroit, Chicago because of Chase Daniels potentially.
Yes, the idea of but
that's all right. Dallas, Washington is out. Okay, that's the late game. By then, yeah, you're napping or doing something else.
And then I think the other one that I'm going to eliminate is corn.
Corn gone. Okay, easy.
And you liked corn being in there.
I did.
Wow.
I did, but...
That's not going to go over well in the hinterlands, where you grow your own corn and have it for Thanksgiving.
I think we'll survive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went corn and... Which football game?
The Cowboys.
Dallas, Washington.
Redskins.
Okay.
Marty Baron joins us next. We got to argue with each other about the draft stuff. 18-year-old versus 19-year-old. We'll let Marty vote something out of Thanksgiving Survivor.
803-0550 for you to join us. 888-550-2550. Sabres in action tonight. They're taking on the Philadelphia Flyers. We will have that game for you on WGR, the only place to hear the Sabres call of the game because it's on NBCSN. I hope Milbury's not working on the intermissions. So 6:30 pregame show, 7:30 faceoff. Kozel on the postgame show. That is tonight. Marty is on the way next to talk hockey with us on WGR. Gobble, gobble.
It's time to talk Sabres hockey on WGR Sports Radio 550. Now, Marty Biron joins Howard and Jeremy. Marty Biron's appearance on WGR is brought to you by Paul William Belch, your power of attorney, by Jim's Stakeout, because hockey fans eat hoagies, by Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center, exceptional care, exceptionally close, and by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth.
Marty's coming up in a moment. The Sabres are in action tonight against the Flyers. 7:30 faceoff, KeyBank Center. Sabres going for a seventh straight win. If they do that, if they get that seventh straight win, longest winning streak since the 06-07 team, the President's Trophy season.
You think they're going to win?
Yeah.
Is it going to be by one goal again?
Sure, why not? But it won't be come from behind.
I can't take that stress.
It won't be come from behind. The Flyers have some goalie injury issues, and Alex Lyon is up from the AHL, expected to start tonight. Still don't know about Scandella's status, lore about an injury, game time call on that. Again, it's NBCSN for TV tonight, so if you want to hear the Sabres call, we will have that for you here on WGR. Coverage begins at 6:30 with the pregame show. Fourth in-season coaching change already in the NHL. Todd McClellan fired by the Edmonton Oilers. Ken Hitchcock is the new coach, and he won his debut last night. They beat San Jose. The Bruins will be without Patrice Bergeron for at least 4 weeks with an upper body injury. National Football League news. The Dolphins say Ryan Tannehill will be back in the starting lineup Sunday against the Colts. Tampa places O.J. Howard on injured reserve. Same top four in the college football poll. Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Michigan, Syracuse is 20th. College hoops, Bama lost to Boise State.
UCF moved ahead of Ohio State.
See, you don't have to worry about Ohio State. Well,
they'd
have to beat Michigan.
I'm totally ready for them to get in the playoff.
Other stuff has to happen in addition to them beating Michigan. They're 10th.
The fix will be in.
Oh, boy. Your headlines brought to you by Metro T-Mobile. Now at Metro, buy a select Samsung Galaxy or LG phone and get a second one for free on a new line. It's Metro by T-Mobile. And we are going to the Western Hotline, where media mogul himself, Martin Biron, is standing by. Good morning, Mr. Biron. Happy day before Thanksgiving.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday before Thanksgiving. That's, the best day to go out and party, Howard. I hope you enjoy it.
Every day for me, Marty, is the best day to party, if you know. That's how I roll, man.
Well, I know that, but still, this is the day where you really go out hard you stay up all night.
I'll see you out after the game.
Marty.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Marty, there are a little bit of chatter about this team reminding people of 05-06. I don't necessarily agree with that outside of the winning and the fun. That 05-06 team started out around 500, 8-9-1, then Ryan Miller gets hurt, and then you go in and win a million games in a row, right? How many was it?
It was 13 starts in a row, but I did lose a game in the middle of it.
In a shootout? Overtime.
And then played a game against the New York Rangers, and then he got hurt at the end of the third period, and when overtime was over, he could barely stand. He played the first shooter in the shootout, and I believe it was Martin Straka. And then after that shot, Lindy was like trying to get the referee's attention to get me in. But really, you can't change goalie in the middle of a shootout unless it's an injury. But Mika Noronen didn't show any signs of injury before that point. So the referee was hesitant to make a change. I went in. I got beat by Jaromir Jagr and by Michael Nylander, and then we lost that game in a shootout. But I hadn't started that game, so it didn't really count against the streak of consecutive starts. 1-13, it was definitely a lot of fun.
13 in a row. What was it like being around the team at that point? I mean, you guys had not had sustained success really at any point. You know, you have a lockout season, you come back from that, you get off to a middling start, and then go on that crazy, crazy tear.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was one of those where I remember it became really, really hard mentally to keep it going. Like, I had my superstitions and I had my routine, and everybody does, but by 12 and 13, it's like you're possessed by those superstitions, and you are so programmed that you're not even human anymore. You're your computer. You're going to the games, and you know you're doing exactly the same thing. And Lindy was a very superstitious coach as well, so everything was the same. Every day was the same. And I remember when we lost the 14th game, it was one of those where, whew, you breathe a little. You're like, okay, now we're back to just playing and just be normal. Not that you want to lose a game ever, but I remember after 13 in a row when we lost, it gave us a feel like the feeling of normalcy again, and not just like one of those that we were on a cloud and things were going so great.
With the 05-06 team, I was curious about this, okay? Turns out you guys were legit, okay? I mean, I know you weren't. Eventually, you get traded, but the next season, they win the President's Trophy. With this team, yep. Marty, I guess with that team, you guys, I was looking it up. So you're a little over 500 at the 21-game mark, and then you have a stretch where, you guys won 12 of 13 games. And I'm assuming you start looking around at each other going, hey, we're really good. How much is there to that? Is this team going through the, well, I don't know, we thought we were going to be better, we're not sure how good we are, hey, look, six straight, come from behind wins, blah, blah, blah. How much is there to that, guys looking around and actually thinking, believing, hey, we could be really good?
Well, it's when we started beating good teams. When you start winning against good teams, and then you don't just win one game against a good team, you win a second game against another good team, and then all of a sudden, you get that streak going, then you start believing that you're good. And the way that we did it, there was a lot of young guys that got called up and young guys that played a big role. So this is where I think there's a big difference between the 05-06 team and this team. I know that the expectations weren't high, and so that's the same thing. I know that it was fun, and there was a feeling of, oh, my goodness, we've been – you know, bad for so many years now, especially in 05-06 with the bankruptcy and change of ownership and all of that. So that was fun too. But if there was five guys from Rochester, yes, five young guys from Rochester getting called up at some point in the next, month or two, and they played a big role, then I would say, yes, it's very similar to what it was, 13 years ago. But because this group of players right now were put together, this summer, and were, Jason Botrill and Phil Housley, they're patient with a lot of guys. I think it has a completely different feel to it. Not to say that it's not the right approach, because, we all know now in the National Hockey League, you have to be able to develop players. It's really different than it was even in the early to mid 2000s. So I'm okay with them saying, okay, well, Pilot is going to play in Rochester and Olofsson is in Rochester and Nylander is in Rochester, mm-hmm. to a certain extent. So I think that's a big difference to what the 05-06 was.
Marty, which player right now has you buzzing about them?
Well, obviously Skinner is one of those that I did not really have any expectation this year for Jeff Skinner, because I hate to put give an easy out to a player and say, oh, well, this situation in Carolina was not good, he wanted out, and then you kind of make excuses for that player instead of saying, hey, you need to be better, you need to work harder, you need to buy into a team concept. So for me, I really did not know what to expect out of Jeff Skinner. And what has me buzzing out of Jeff Skinner is not so much, the goals and his contribution, is how hard he works in the offensive zone. And I know, 200-foot players, that's a phrase that's being thrown around a lot. And there's a very few 200-foot players in the National Hockey League that excels in all three zones. So I'm not going to ask Jeff Skinner to be Patrice Bergeron in the defensive zone, but I'm not going to give him a free pass for just wanting to score goals and sit in the slot and let guys work hard for him to get results. He gets results. He goes after pucks. He is good on the forecheck. He never stops moving. He's got a good active stick. He's got a little chip on his shoulder. So he's got me buzzing, and I think that the performances and the stats are just a bonus out of that for him and the team.
Rasmus Dahlin, Marty, let's talk the last three games in particular, okay? Rough night in Winnipeg, really strong game in Minnesota, up and down a little bit in Pittsburgh. Give me, how would you classify in totality the last three games for the rookie?
Well, I think you pointed it right. It's been a bit of a up and down roller coaster kind of week for Rasmus Dahlin, but the one constant, the one consistent data out of Dahlin is that Phil Housley has a ton of confidence in Rasmus Dahlin, and he puts him out there. He just doesn't care if Dahlin goes out in the first period and has four giveaways and gets burned wide by a player. He's going to put him out there again. And that is so good for the development of a young defenseman, not to play with handcuffs, not to play scared, not to just say, hey, I got to throw it off the glass and out because I don't want to be the guy that makes a mistake because I won't see the ice again. And, you know, because the NHL is not about, you know, just being safe anymore. It's about wanting to make plays. It's about trying to hit a guy with, you know, that's got speed down the neutral zone and hit him with a perfect pass so that you can create some offense. And I think, you know, we are, you guys probably talked about it. The football game Monday night was a really perfect, you know, indication of young players like Pat Mahomes and Jared Goff or whatever, making mistakes, but sticking with the game plan and then in the end, making it just an amazing game. I think Rasmus Dahlin, he's being handled the same way, and I absolutely love it, and I love what Phil's doing with him.
Marty, you tweeted me during the week about the NHL's potential change of the draft process. We're talking about Dahlin, a guy who's come in at 18 and performed well. We've seen other 18-year-olds do it. I'm very much against the idea of delaying the draft to 19-year-olds, but you think there is a benefit, so lay it out for me.
Well, here's the thing. There's only a handful of players that play in the National Hockey League at 18 and that you actually know what they are and how that's going to be able to be what player they're going to become when you're 17 years old getting drafted at 18. Now, that extra year of development for me would be so beneficial to the Canadian Hockey League players, the players that play in, you know, the WHL, OHL, and Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Because right now, it's really hard to move ahead. Like, so you're a 16U hockey player. You know, back in the 90s and 80s and 90s, you could play in the OHL and you could, you know, play well at 16 and 17, have a couple years of OHL experience. The scouts are seeing you. You get drafted and you get your contract and you play pro. Now, there's very few 17-year-old hockey players in the juniors that have that effect. It's much more of an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old league. So instead of rushing young players to be 17-year-old and to play in the CHL or to play even in the USHL, you know, you give them that extra year of development. You let them play their 15U year. You let them play their 16U year. You have them play maybe, you know, tier two or whatever at 17 before they start playing major juniors. And I think that would help developing players and give the team more of an indication of what they're really drafting instead of taking a chance on a player and then 2 years later, you know, that player doesn't even factor in your organization because, you know, you say, well, we didn't realize like he was that type of player. I think it would be better for everybody. And most importantly for me, I think it would be better for goaltenders. You don't see goaltenders getting drafted in the first round anymore or the second round very rarely. Why? Because teams are hesitant to draft goaltenders because at 17, you don't know what you got. At 18 and even 19, then you have a better indication of what a goalie is and what kind of maturity and what kind of development you know, they have. So that would be much better. I know it would be a mess. I know the first year you wouldn't have anybody to draft and it would be kind of a delayed year. But I really like the idea to go to a 19-year-old draft. And if you're really that good at 18, you do what Austin Matthews did last year. You know, go play a year in Europe. Go develop over there because, you know, you'll make some money or whatever, but then come back to the NHL for the draft.
But in that case, in the case of Matthews, he would be playing in Europe for 2 years.
No, because Matthews,
want to move the cutoff date. That's right.
It was a late birthday. So now the other thing with drafting 19-year-olds, is you could go to a true birth year draft and not have this late birthday situation. Because in youth hockey, if you're a 2001 birth year, you play with the 2001. But now, for the NHL draft. If you're 2001, but your birth is after September 15th, you have an extra year of development. They keep saying that being a late birthday is such an advantage mm-hmm. to players because they have an extra year of development. That's why I would make the draft year a year older, and I would stick to birth year and not have this late draft.
Marty, you want to vote out some stuff off of Thanksgiving Survivor?
Oh, I don't know if it's still there, but cranberry sauce, you're gone.
It's already been voted out by Brayton. Yeah. I'll give you the list. Okay. You tell us what you're voting out, all right?
Go.
Here's what's left. Sweet potatoes, stuffing, beer, wine, liquor, family, friends, Jeff Skinner, the Detroit Lions game, the Saints-Falcons game, turkey trot, rolls, pie, the night before, holiday mode, which means, you know, you kind of turn your eyes to the holidays, and leftovers. That's what's left.
You vote out Skinner, Marty. We're not talking ever again. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm voting off wine.
Wine. Okay.
And I like wine, but Thanksgiving is more about turkey, beer, football, dessert, all of the other things you said. And am I going to see you, Jeremy, at the turkey trot tomorrow morning?
I mean, I don't know if you'll see me, but I'm going to be there.
Okay, what's your pace? Because I'll look for you in the crowd.
Boy, my pace. I don't know. I run 5 miles once a year. I usually get it done in about 47 to 50 minutes. So
okay.
We'll see. But it's going to be super cold, and I might wake up with the sniffles if it seems really good.
You look a little
like
peaked.
My son is like, oh, but it's going to be like 20 degrees. I don't know, Dad. I don't know if we're going to do it. We did it together last year, and we're doing it again. So I'm like, dude, we're dressing up, and we're going. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
You won't even feel the cold. So,
no, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I'm going to be in that same middle of the pack group, so maybe I'll look for you.
Yeah, and looking at tomorrow's forecast at 8 a.m., it's 15 degrees.
Ooh.
So we're looking at like 17 to 19 at race time.
Wind chill, too. Don't forget wind chill.
Yeah, yeah. But 15 Celsius is like what? Like 55 Fahrenheit? So
yeah.
That's great.
So you can run in shorts. Marty, have a great Thanksgiving.
You guys as well. Thanks, guys.
Marty Braun joining us on our West Her Hotline, brought to you by Paul William Belts, your power of attorney. Jim's Steakout, because hockey fans eat hoagies. Firth Jewelers, for all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. And by Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center, exceptional care, exceptionally close. Our Weinerline call of the day is coming up in a moment. Sal, top of the hour. And Paul at 9, WGR.
I know this possibly slithers into that taboo area of wine-on-wine crime, but that guy yesterday talking about what him and his friends nicknamed Casey Middlestat as Casey Middlefat. Middlefat, I'm willing to bet that these guys are online video gamers about two or three cupcakes short of riding around in a hover round due to their own obesity. Casey Middlefat. Middle fat. Come on, man.
All right, real quick. I want to defend people that play video games online. That's all. Nothing wrong with that.
I got a quick wine today. I was reading a story about Pete Carroll. They were talking about how he is bucking the system. You know, he's the Seahawks are the only team in the NFL to have run the ball more than 50% of their offensive snaps. He says he is vowing to get back to his philosophy of running the ball well and playing good defense. Talked about how everybody wants to run the football, but you got to be really committed to it. And that's what the difference is. We're really committed to running the football. And I'm reading that thinking, you are the guy who is connected with the most infamous play call decision in the history of the Super Bowl by not running the football. So, Mr. I'm committed to it. You've got to run the ball. I'll buck the system. You threw the football from the 1 yard line when you had Marshawn Lynch in your backfield and will go down in history as the guy who, why didn't you run the ball in the Super Bowl? Maybe you should have been a little more committed to the running game back then. That's my quick one. Hey, well, let's get to a quick break here. We have lots to get to. We still have Thanksgiving Survivor to fill out, to throw out the rest of the things from Thanksgiving Survivor. We got Sal coming up. We'll get you ready for the Bills and the Jaguars on Sunday. We have Sabres hockey tonight. We're talking Sabres hockey with you at 803-0550. Paul's going to join us at 9. That's all still to come. And believe it or not, on top of all that, it's Hoagie Hump Day. So make sure you tweet us at some point today. It's very easy to do. Tweet at WGR550. Use the hashtag Hoagie Humpty, Hump Day rather, and you have a chance to win a $25 gift certificate to Jim's Steakhouse. That's all you got to do anytime today at WGR550, hashtag Hoagie Hump Day. And hopefully you win the gift card from Jim's Steakhouse.